So my name's Scott Scher. You can call me Scott. Everybody, hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
All right. So we want this to be, I don't know about we, I want this to be an interactive kind of a session. We're in the middle of the afternoon. We've all gone, you know, our brains are kind of wrung out. If you have a question or an assertion, get my attention. I may not notice you right away. You can throw things at me. That's all right. So let's don't save your questions for the end. Let's get them out. If we don't get through all the slides, that's okay. The most important ones are at the front. So don't worry about slowing things down, especially you folks who are hesitant to hold up your hands and say, I have a question. I particularly want to hear from you. And I have a way to reinforce that. So everyone who asks a question or who helps me out, I'm from Portland, Oregon. I like things that are biodegradable. So this is about as biodegradable as it gets. This is chocolate. I work for a place called Ripple Labs. They're based in San Francisco. And strangely enough, Ghirardelli chocolate comes from San Francisco. So if you help the presentation by asking a question or correcting me if I'm wrong, I'm not an expert. I'm way open to people saying, hey, that's not quite right. You get a reward. I've got 80 of these. I don't think I'll run out, but it's possible. So ask early and ask often. So I want to talk about Constexpr. So there are two parts. There's a question. You get chocolate right away.
Yeah, what did Lone Star Concrete Company had to do with Constexpr?
What does?
Lone Star Concrete Company.
Oh, what does the Lone, well, so.
Before.
I need to pass this chocolate back. Can you pass that chocolate back?
Yes, my chocolate.
Thanks. So the concrete company, there are a number of pictures in here, and most of them relate to concrete or stone or something like that. And that's because, and we'll get more into this, Constexpr is all about finding values or things at compile time. At least that's my take on it. That's what I find to be valuable about Constexpr. Constexpr is not only a compile time thing, and we'll get into those details later on. But the thing that I think is cool about it is what it allows you to do at compile time without having to do template metaprogramming, which I have tried and I've occasionally succeeded, but this is way easier, in my opinion. So let's get started. More concrete. So Constexpr, what an odd word. Why would someone use this word? I think partly it was something that they could introduce into the language that nobody else had used yet, because there's this problem with keywords that you don't want to put in a keyword that somebody else has already used. So yeah, it's a really odd word, but it's kind of this oddball contraction of constant expression. So that's what we're going to end up talking about, is constant expressions. Constexpr allows you to evaluate expressions at compile time. It's kind of like template metaprogramming, but it uses a familiar C++ syntax. So it's easier to maintain. You don't have to be a freaking expert in order to figure this stuff out. A lot of it reads like, well, depending on whether you're dealing with C++ 11 or C++ 14, it's pretty much standard C++ code, which is something I think is really nifty. It only produces constant values. So this is stuff that, you know, once it's produced, it's done. It's not moving, it's not changing. So, like I said, it can't change at runtime. So why is that interesting? Who cares? Actually, one of the motivations for this talk was I got excited about Constexpr, and I'd walk up to programmers like I always do in a bus station or whatever, and say, you know, let me tell you about Constexpr. And they say, well, if you're doing all this stuff at compile time, well, what's the good of that? What's useful that you can do at compile time? It turns out, in my opinion, there are a lot of things you can do at compile time that are pretty useful. Some of that is because of my background as an embedded developer. I did embedded developing for quite a number of years. And the more stuff you can do ahead, the less, you know, the errors are caught early, the errors are caught at compile time, which is the very best possible time. Your footprint is smaller, and probably I'm getting way ahead of my, all right, so no runtime cost. There's, when that value is already present in your image, you're not computing it at runtime. Your compiler did that work for you. You've reduced your executable footprint, which most people don't care about, but if you're doing embedded development or a constrained platform, this can make a big difference. And probably the most important part is whenever you can, I'm not saying constexpr solves all problems. Constexpr is a very specific kind of a thing. You can't do everything at compile time for most problems. That's fine, I understand that. But there are things that you can do at compile time. And if you can, my position is that you should. So the things that you can find at compile time, you're way ahead if you can find those errors, if you can find, whatever the problem is, if you can find that at compile time, you just made a big win. Because the compiler, runtime errors, you have to actually execute the code before the error happens. The compiler walks all of your code every time you compile. So even an error in an oddball little corner, the compiler will find that. So you've nailed that. You don't have to rely on your unit tests getting into the odd corners. You don't have synchronization concerns. This is sort of a setup for my talk tomorrow, which I hope some of you will attend. But if you build containers at runtime and you happen to know what all of those values are going to be, then there's often a synchronization problem. As you build that container, if it contains a vector or whatever, if there's a race, folks getting into that container, then you have to do all the synchronization work. You have to do your threads and locking and all that business. And why bother with that if you don't need to? So if you have a constant container, make it a constexpr constant container, and now you don't have any races dealing with that container. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. So constexpr is a new keyword. It was introduced in C++ 11. See if I can stop getting ahead of myself. So the keyword is applied in two different cases. One is when you're declaring a value or an object. And in that case, you say constexpr int or whatever, and that says that it's going to be a literal type. The other thing you can do is you can use that constexpr keyword for declaring functions and constructors. So those are the two situations where the constexpr keyword is going to play into what you're up to and where you're going to want to drop that constexpr keyword in. So the place we're going to spend most of our attention is on constexpr functions later on. But probably the more important part is the constexpr values. So we can make constexpr values, it's easier if I look over here. So here we've declared a number of these values. Now, there's an interesting aspect to this slide. Every single one of those asserts is a static assert. That means that every one of those checks is happening at compile time. And if the compiler is not happy with the result, it will stop you at compile time. If there's a problem, it will not get into production. You won't even finish compiling. You won't get an object file. So even though we're going to be talking about constexpr code a lot, it's the constexpr keyword on the value that's the most important part. That's what's going to stop you. Yes?
I'm just going to throw in here, because these are the simple examples. What's the difference between slapping constexpr in const3 equals
Yeah, so the question is, what's the difference between the const expr int and saying static const int? And at this point, you know, it's basically interchangeable. As we get to something that's more complicated than an int, and you get some chocolate. Can you pass this back? Okay, if I throw it, I'm gonna hit you.
It's fine.
All right, okay, it's dangerous. I hit somebody in the face with some Skittles once. we're dealing with an int. A static const int would work great. As the object types get more interesting, then, like, as a matter of fact, if you get to a floating point type, you can't do that. And const expr and float get along just great.
Was there any reason why you did int in double instead of just two ints?
Yeah, well, so the reason I did double is because, as we were talking about ints earlier, you can do static const int. If you do a static const double, that's not something that you can operate on at compile time. So these are all, you know, the double in particular, any of the floating point types. The compiler will know about those, and you can do static asserts on const expr doubles, which you could not do.
I meant in terms of the comparison and the static assert, was there a purpose why the types were different?
Nah.
Okay.
Just fun. Chocolate. I'm going to have to develop my throwing arm if I start getting questions from the back. So those are all data types that are at namespace scope. You can also put stuff inside of a function that at pi in the function. So that's worth thinking about. If you have, how many of you have heard the phrase magic statics? Yeah, okay. So it's around. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about this, but the fact that that const expr pi, now, you know, that's a constant, but if that were being computed with a const expr function, when you walk into the function, see, the compiler's job is to make sure that that value is initialized before the function executes. And that means it has, as long as it gets initialized, it doesn't matter. So oftentimes there are, if you have a function that has, you know, is used in a multi-threaded situation, there have previously, before C++ 11 or 14 or something like that, there were race conditions where you could have a function where you'd enter into the function, the static variable hadn't been initialized yet, it would start initializing, somebody else would race in. And now that's all being protected. You know, if you're using a modern compiler, the compilers are effectively doing locks in order to prevent that from happening. Well, if you do it with const expr, nobody needs a lock because the value is determined at compile time. It's all set to go. Yes?
So at this point, that might fall into the same category as the static. What would the difference or advantage to const expr be here as opposed to, say, pound define const underscore 3?
Yeah. Yeah, so the question was, what's the advantage of const expr versus a static const? And in this particular case, because it's a floating point number, we can initialize that very easily. So it's no value yet. Let's wait until we compute a value. And
in that case, isn't there value though?
Here.
Because if you're using a pound space define, don't you
have... Hey, good catch.
That would be, you have multiple, every single time it's called, you can have a multiple essentially. You only have one.
Yeah, so the question is there not, let's see if I can... So let's not deal with a macro, but One of the things that will happen, if this were a more complicated expression than just dropping a floating point value in there, and here's your chocolate, is that that flag, to see whether something needs to be initialized, A, there's that race condition when you first enter. Secondly, there is a very, very small cost to entering the function every time you enter the function, because it has to see whether that value was initialized or not. So in the case of a constexpr value, it knows that was initialized. It was initialized at compile time. So that test of the flag has now gone away. So there's, yeah, so there is value. Yeah, and I didn't think his question was about macros. I thought his was about like static ints or whatever. So yeah. Anyway, so we great questions. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We need to get more in the back so I can develop my throwing arm. So you can also declare static data members of literal types inside of a struct. So those are basically your options of where you can use constexpr. So, yes?
Does it actually matter whether it's static or not static because it's a constant?
In the struct, the...
Does it add to the size of the struct?
Let's see. Oh, we'll get there. This is the question. So, inside of the struct, that has to be static because it's going to be constant. So it's true for all instances of that struct. So you can't have a non-static member that's also constexpr. Okay, and you get chocolate. Oh, here's more chocolate coming. Yes? Let's get to some of those questions later on. Okay, but I want to reinforce the questions. Almost made it. I'll make it. Going to make you chase that chocolate.
Thank you.
So, values can be any literal type. That's including floating point types, character literals, pointer literals, objects, and we'll get to how to declare an object so that a pretty much any type, so that it can be taken as a literal. They require no storage declaration, so a lot of these things you have to, if you had a static and a struct, for example, you have to declare the static in the struct, and then you have to declare storage for it someplace in a CPP file, typically. You don't have to do that with constexpr. The compiler takes care of it for you. And it's not okay to have constexpr parameters on a function. Don't ask me why. I'm not part of the standards committee. I'm sure they had great reasons. And if you try to do this, the compiler will stop you. So don't worry about it. The compiler will let you know. So how do you use these things? You can use them anywhere literals could be used. So you can use them as template parameters, non-type type template parameters. You can use them to determine the dimensions of an array. You can use them for enumeration initialization, and you can use them in standard runtime code. So the compiler really knows the value. You know, that's if you think about how templates get instantiated, there's a bunch of thrashing about, and so, you know, by the compiler. So it knows the value. They are implicitly const. So the values, this is different from, you know, we'll get to the code later on, and the code gets a little blurry about the constness. But here on the value, they are implicitly const. You can't change them. If you cast away the const, the compiler will let you do this. Marshall's not in here. Marshall has this great talk about what happens when you get undefined behavior. The way I like to do it, to talk about it, is that if you set up a situation for undefined behavior, you're now allowing your cat, the compiler, to make your cat have puppies. And you may not even have a cat. So undefined behavior is a very dangerous place to go. Yes?
So you say casting away const is undefined behavior, but isn't it true that it's only undefined if you try to modify it afterwards? Otherwise, it's still OK?
You'd have to. So the question was, is it OK to cast away the const and then not modify the value? You'd have to talk to a compiler guy. I prefer not to tread in those areas myself, because the compiler has this nasty way of biting me when I'm not watching.
You at least create a copy, though.
So, yeah. So, thank you. So we've talked about values now. Oh, okay, I missed. Sorry. Okay, so one of the experts just said that the question was, if you cast away the constness of a const expert value, the question was, can you cast away the const but not modify it and get away with it? And the expert says, it's okay as long as you don't touch it. So, but my suggestion would be, don't cast it away, so that the compiler will stop you if you do by accident touch it once you've cast it away. So we're going to spend most of our time talking about the computations. Oh, and chocolate. Yeah, I can't. Yeah, that. But he brought value. No, I can't throw it that far. Someone's going to have to pass it back. We'll do a bucket brigade across.
There's your third piece
of chocolate. So computations. So you can declare free functions, member functions, and constructors as const expert. The code that's, once you put that const expert declaration on that function or constructor, the code that the compiler will allow you to put inside there becomes more constrained. You can't put just any code inside of a function or constructor. You have to follow the rules. The rules in C++ 11 are pretty highly constrained, but the cool thing is it's still C++. In C++ 14, there were some folks who went to some heroic efforts to allow a lot of very cool stuff to be inside of the code, and we'll see some examples of that. So it's the const expert constructor that allows you to make a user-defined literal type. That's a little bit counterintuitive. When you first hear about const expert, there are people who want to declare const expert classes. So you want to put that const expert class, whatever. That's not the way you do it. The way you do it is you take one or more of the constructors for that class. So you can have a class that has one const expert constructor and other non-const expert constructors. And if you use that const expert constructor, you can get a const expert literal out of that, or a constant literal out of that. So if you put const expert on the front, then that allows the compiler to produce the value from that computation at compile time. And that's the cool part. Again, just to reiterate quickly, why would you want to do that? Because you can reduce your runtime execution time, you can reduce the program footprint because you no longer have to include the code that produces the value. You're catching errors at compile or link time. And fortunately for me, neither Herb Sutter nor Andre are in here, but I think this is probably one of their top quotes for me. So there was this interesting word that I used in the previous slide about allowed to be computed at compile time. So what does that really mean? Well, okay, if you have a constexpr function that can run at compile time, it can also run at runtime. So let's look at an example of that. So here's our very first constexpr function. What it does is it takes in a value, divides it in two, and returns the value. It's not a very interesting function, but you know, we have to start someplace. So we can call that function and put the result of that call into a constexpr value that we're going to call half. And now we can do a static assert on that value. That same function, because it's just standard C++, nothing funny about that code, we can call that same function at runtime with a value that the compiler has no idea what the value is going to be. Okay, so we're going to wait until runtime. We're going to get the value in our hand because somebody hit that keyboard. We're going to divide it in half. Now, we can't do the static assert. I hope it's clear to everybody why you can't do the static assert on a value you don't know until runtime. But the compiler will keep track of that difference. And part of how it does that is by whether the value of run is not declared constexpr. It's just const. But the value of half, further up the slide, that's a constexpr value. Yes?
Can you replace constexpr in front of half with outer? Will outer figure out that it's constexpr?
No. Auto will not, so the question. The question was, will auto figure out that the value that's being returned is constexpr? And the answer is no. That even though you call a constexpr function, the general inclination of the compiler will be to not produce constexpr values unless you demand it. So make a point of demanding it as often as you can. That's, see if I can, we'll try. Oh, almost got it. Beeman.
Is there a way to poison Kappa so that it cannot be used at runtime without generating a compiler?
Yeah, so Beeman asked, is there a way to poison, half of? And the answer is yes, mostly. And we'll get to that later on. That's something, yeah, and thank you for that setup. Yeah, we're going to have to Bucket Brigade the chocolate back on this one. Here, so this is going back. Question?
We have something like return value optimization, where you pass...
Could you speak up and try it again?
There is something called return value optimization, where you pass classes as the first argument or pointer to it. Though they told me that if you return a const value, that doesn't work. Will the implicit const also prevent this?
So I think the question is whether any of the stuff that we're seeing here is going to prevent the return value optimization from working. And if you declare a constexpr value, then nothing at runtime, nothing gets returned. It's already there. So you're better off than you would be if you had the return value optimization. Yes.
For the case where you do it at runtime, like the second part of the example.
So the way a function supports, okay. So I'm being advised to move on. That would take us off track. I was about to go on some other stuff, which I don't need to. Thank you. Okay, so we have constexpr evaluation. It may be at runtime. To force that translation to happen at, or that evaluation to happen during translation, there are two ways within the standard to do that. One is to declare the value that receives, and it's going slower than I thought, the value that receives it as constexpr. That's my favorite way to do it, because if you look at it, you can see what's going on, and you know that the compiler is going to put it there. The next one is to use it where a literal is required by the compiler. And this means that you have to be a little bit more aware of, when does the compiler have to know this. For array boundaries, this is pretty obvious. If you're using it for a template parameter, this is pretty obvious. There are some other places where it's not quite as obvious. But if the compiler says, I have to know this value now, it will insist on it. The constexpr, yes. Yes.
So you can ensure that the constexpr on a constructor works by using constexpr value of that class.
So the question is, does the constexpr constructor work the same way? And the answer is yes. That if you have an object with a constexpr constructor and the value that is being constructed is declared as constexpr, it will be determined at compile time, or the compiler will tell you it can't determine it. So you either get a valid value out of it, or you get a compiler error. So good question, and you get some chocolate. And I can't throw it that far. Could you pass that back? Thank you. So the constexpr keyword is part of the definition. That won't compile because we're seeing two different declarations of const 5, one of which is constexpr and one is not. So when the compiler sees that, it'll say, you can't do that. I won't let you do that. Now, if it were to happen in two different translation units, the compiler doesn't necessarily get to see that. Nevertheless, don't do it. Yes. Yeah, so the question is, I think, is the constexpr part of the declaration of the function?
Is it also part of the return type? Can I bind it to non-const reference?
So the constexpr is not part of the return type, because either a constant value or a non-constant value can be returned. So, okay. All right, so they are implicitly inlined. The compiler has to be able to see the definition of the function before anybody invokes it. There are a couple of interesting rules regarding constexpr and floating point. So this one's really interesting, that if you have a floating point value or a floating point thing that's being computed by your compiler, you can run that computation at runtime. You can run that computation at compile time. The compiler is not guaranteed to produce the same result from both of those computations. Does anybody have an idea why? Yes. Perfect. So the issue is that if you're cross-compiling, your floating point units may be different. So the standards folks gave themselves an appropriate out, saying, we can't guarantee this. We encourage compiler vendors to do the right thing and produce the same value, but they can't guarantee it. So just to be aware, if you're doing floating point computations at compile time, in particular, the ones that are done at compile time, if you have if you're cross-compiling and you have a heavy-duty processor and you're running on some kind of a wimpy processor, the wimpy processor may not give you as good results, you know, good in quotes, depending on what you consider to be good. The results could be different because the wimpier compiler is going to struggle a little bit more and maybe allow a little bit furrier results. Yes.
In the case you do lose your, I guess, precision would be the correct term.
Yeah.
Where do you lose the precision? I would assume off the tail end.
Yeah, so the question is, where do you lose your precision? And the answer is, it's entirely implementation dependent. So this, you're in the hands of your compiler vendor. Yes. So the from one of our GCC experts in the back, he says that GCC at least, so I'm heads up, I'm going to be sending some chocolate back. I can't throw it that far. Send that back. The GCC folks have been working hard at trying to keep those aligned. And it looks like there's another question back there. Okay, and so Howard gets chocolate for that, for sure. More chocolate going back, heads up. So the point was that you can change the way your floating point unit works, your rounding implementation or whatever, at runtime. So you can't guarantee under any circumstance, even with a marvelous simulation, that the floating point computation is going to be exactly the same. So the other thing that's interesting, a lot of folks who do floating point computations do that by looking inside of the raw floating point literal and, you know, crawling around in the bits, because there's this exponential characteristic of most floating point implementations, and people take advantage of that. And ConstExpr will not let you look inside. I've tried. You know, there may be people who are more clever than I am, but I think the folks on the standard really nailed this one down. Somebody can tell me they've figured out how to do it, but they're doing their darndest to discourage you from looking at the bits. In part, that's a portability issue, because there's no guarantee that some processor's representation is going to be IEEE anything. So, you know, again, we're dealing with cross-compiling. Oh, okay.
We implement ConstExpr evaluation in Java.
Okay, so yeah.
It's Java types for representing floating points and so on.
Yeah, so Peter's saying that they're using, could you send this chocolate?
Oh, yeah, I don't, sure.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, it'll taste the same whether it's cracked or not. So Peter was saying they use a Java to run their IDE, and so they're computing floating point values for C++ in Java. So who knows what that representation is? So let's look at ConstExpr in C++ 11. So we're going to, what are the constraints on a C++ 11 ConstExpr function? It can't be virtual. It has to return a literal type or a reference to a literal type. The parameters have to be literal types or references to literal types. And the body of the function is a single statement. One statement. That's it. And that statement has to be a return. Okay? So this is C++ 11. This is where it all starts. This is an important point to remember for later. Unevaluated sub-expressions are ignored. So what are we going to do with just a return statement?
Ternary operator.
Well, okay, so we can do compound statements. We can do function calls. Oh yeah, somebody said something about the ternary operator. What are we gonna use? I heard it. It's getting louder, everybody. One, two, three.
Recursion.
We got it, okay. So, and we don't hand out chocolate to everybody for that one. So let's look at a function. So this is, we're gonna do the power of a value, you know, exponential value. And we're gonna do this, we're gonna code this so that we can determine a compile time. This is for C++11, constexpr. And this function just kind of sets us up because we're gonna allow ourselves to do negative values. And so there's the funny stuff that happens with the power, the negative power of a value is multiplying it by the inverse of the value itself. So that's really all we're setting up here. And up here at the top, this is where the recursion happens. And it's not very complicated. This is all standard C++ code. As long as you don't mind a little bit of recursion, we're now allowing ourselves to compute the power of a value at compile time. Okay, any questions?
Sorry if I'm kind of dense there. Under user-facing interface.
Yes.
Constexpr double. No, it looks like the name doesn't have the constexpr, but it's recursive.
So the question is, the question was whether there are too many constexprs. So the first, the lower function, the one that says user-facing interface, that's not recursive. Okay. So what it does is it takes in the value and it says, is the exponent negative or positive?
The confusing thing is the font, the name is constexpr underscore power underscore int. Oh, yeah, I was confused too. Thank you.
Okay, so the problem is the name starts with a constexpr underscore, and you have to pay attention to that underscore. Yes, Peter.
May I point out something that I point out to my students? Multiplying by minus one is a very suboptimal means to express just negation, which we have an operator for, minus.
Okay. So Peter is telling me I should write my code better, and I'm sure he is right. that I should be using unary minus, and there are at least two pieces of chocolate that need to head over this direction. Okay. So, yeah, my code needs to improve. I don't have any doubts about that. So, one of the things that's interesting, there's a throw in there. What are we going to do with that? Why is there a throw in a constexpr function? That doesn't seem like something that's going to work at compile time, does it? Yeah, and this compiles. But there's a throw. What in the heck is going on there? Yes, Peter.
Actually, it will fail to compile if you call it with an exponent where it would throw at runtime.
Yes, okay.
If you call it like that, it compiles.
You already got at least two pieces of chocolate.
I have students implement things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So what Peter is saying is that it will fail to compile. Because remember earlier there was this yellow stripe about unevaluated sub-expressions are ignored. The throw, as long as it's not evaluated, can just sit there benignly. Let me advance to the next set of slides so that we can walk through the points. So this is an idiom for constexpr code. Once there gets to be a lot of constexpr code in the world, you'll be seeing throws in it. If you evaluate the throw during compilation, then the compiler will stop you dead. Because it says, I can't throw. As long as you don't evaluate it, it will just sit there. And the other part of it is that if it's at runtime, because the return value isn't being used where a constant expression is required, if you're at runtime, then it turns into a legitimate throw. So this is a standard way of handling errors within C++. Yes, your question.
So that could then also be a easy way of at least finding out if we're getting compile time or runtime evaluation.
Yeah, okay, so the point is that this would be an easy way to find out whether we're getting runtime or compile time evaluation. And I'm going to have to move faster. Thank you very much. Yeah, so let me send some chocolate back to you. Let's see how far back that goes. Yeah, so that keeps going back. So hopefully we'll get to the slide where we leverage this. Yes, question in the back. So the question is, if you have a compiler where you've turned off exceptions, what's going to happen here? And that's a great question. I don't have any experience with that, so I can't give you the answer. Somehow you have to know the way that you would deal with error conditions and work within that. So we can use this function that we just wrote. We can use it at compile time. And you can tell that it's compile time because we're using static asserts. You can use that same function at runtime because here we've got a value that we don't possibly know what it is until runtime.
You just said that the floating point arithmetic is not guaranteed, but you're using equal.
Yeah, it happens to work for my compiler. So the point was I used equal on a floating point value, and yeah, it happened to work for my compiler. So a C++11 constexpr constructor, the parameters have to be literals or references to literals. You can't have a function try block. The constructor body has to be empty, nothing in the constructor body in C++11. Basically, everything that's not static has to be initialized. Any constructor that is invoked by the object also has to be constexpr. And every assignment in the initializer list has to be a constant expression. So when I think about the way C++11 constexpr works, I see sort of little C++ interpreters running. There's a C++ interpreter that runs here on function A, and it invokes another copy of that interpreter when it figures out, or when it goes to function B, and then function B returns a value that gets consumed or passed along through function A to function C. So that's the way I think about it. You end up thinking like a functional programmer. So in C++11, constexpr is pretty seriously constrained. But if you put some effort into it, you can do some cool stuff. So let's get to constexpr in C++14. In C++11, it gives you the rules for what you can do. And C++14, they turned this on its head and they said, what are the things we can't do? And the list is long here. I don't want you to memorize it. It's two pages of things, but it includes things like you can't do new, you can't do delete, you can't do throw, you can't do reinterpret cast, you can't do dynamic cast. But once you've gotten through that list, everything else is fair game. The rules are there to protect the interpreter. The interpreter doesn't want to be working on anything that it doesn't know what it is. So you know, in the case of a const expert object, 10 minutes, boy. In the case of a const expert object, it has to get everything initialized up front. And then we'll see in const expert functions, you can actually modify those values in C++ 14. Okay. Mostly, it's like regular code. If you were to read it, it reads like regular C++. So where we were doing, we had two different functions to perform the inversion. And we had recursion before. We now have a single function. And it has the same kind of inelegance that Peter pointed out earlier. I didn't change my coding style. So in C++ 14, this is much easier. And you know, as in terms of maintaining it, it just gets a lot more straightforward. You don't need to read this code. It's exactly the same code we saw before. You use it in exactly the same way. Question?
Does this version compile faster because
Yeah, so the question is, does it compile faster? And the answer is, I honestly don't know. My examples were too small to make a difference. But chocolate. And then I think
not necessarily.
Yeah. So watch your head. Beeman.
The long list is too long to memorize. If you violate that list, is every one of those that causes a compile error? And that's why you can, is that the reason you can totally ignore the list? Because you'll soon be told about it.
Yeah, so the question is, why did I not go through and carefully enumerate every entry in that list? And Beeman figured out my response to that is the reason I don't bother memorizing the list is because the compiler is going to hit me over the head if I try to do something wrong most of the time. Now, if it's in an unevaluated sub-expression, you can put, it's not just throws, it can be other stuff in there that doesn't really belong, and then you won't find out until you try to evaluate that at compile time. So it's not perfect, you know, protection, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's a long list of stuff, but the list makes sense to me. And Beeman, you already got some chocolate, right? Okay. We won't hit anybody else with the chocolate. So in C++ 14 const expert constructors, we can now put a body in. This makes a huge difference, having the body on the constructor. And then this list is basically saying initialize everything, okay? So as long as you initialize everything, you can now put stuff in the body of the constructor. The way I think about I model this as a C++ interpreter, but that context has now grown. It's not each individual function has its own context. The context of lower functions knows something about what's happening above, that they're all producing a constant value. So you end up thinking like a C++ programmer who doesn't have new. And I can think like that, maybe some of you can't, but it works well for me. So we have less than 10 minutes and we're gonna rip through compile time parsing as our example. So let's make a binary literal. They don't have a binary literal in C++ 11. Can we make one? Turns out, yes. It's a single function. Yeah, it uses recursion. But this particular implementation allows you to put commas in your binary literal. So you don't want to spend too much time studying that. Well, let's just assume that I have tried that. It compiles, it runs. Here's some example code that uses that compile time binary literal. And I spent a bunch of time doing embedded development, and boy, wouldn't I have ever killed for a binary literal. Now, we've got it. We'll get to this, but you know, it happens in C++ 14, but you know, I really wanted this. So, oh, yeah, and it's worth pointing out that I can make a binary double. Not that that's extraordinarily useful, thank you. So let's do that, solve that same problem in C++ 14. It's easier to code than it is in C++ 11, but it's not as useful because in C++ 14, the standards committee gave us that literal. So a round of applause for the standards committee here. Thank you very much, thank you. Yes, my approval of the standards committee. And that's the way you would do the binary literal in C++ 14. But the code that, you know, where we did it with recursion in C++ 11, this is very straightforward. And I'm probably just about out of time. The example code here is identical to the other example code. It runs exactly the same way. Is there a weakness in that particular implementation? Well, I was taking in a char star. Can we get rid of the problems of buffer overruns? Yeah. So here's, actually I stole this from cppreference.com. So certainly don't, you know, go to cppreference.com and look at their constexpr page. This example sitting right there. So what it will do is it will take in a literal char array, determine the length, capture that at compile time or in your constexpr evaluation, and so limit yourself so that you can't walk off the end of your buffer. And this is how you would use that. So I'm probably just about out of time. Let's see how fast we can get through this. So limits on constexpr. So there's an annex B in the standard that has two statements regarding constexpr that are really important. One is how many, what are the minimum suggested number of recursive invocations that are allowed by constexpr? That's 512. In C++ 14, how many full expressions would be allowed to be evaluated inside of producing a single constexpr value? And that's over 1 million. And the actual limits are up to your compilers. So those are recommendations for minimum values. Whatever your compiler does is what your compiler does. How do you debug this stuff? Sometimes you just bowl through. What I like doing is running the code in the debugger. So just because you've declared a function as constexpr, you can still run it at runtime. So you initialize a non-literal with the function and then run that in the debugger. And compare that to debugging a template. Okay? It really makes a big difference. Adding print statements, however, is tough because you always want to put in a print statement in some part that's going to execute. And prints, since they do I/O, they are never constexpr. So you have to make a copy of the function or remove the constexpr qualifier while you're debugging it if you like to debug with prints. But if you've got a good debugger, you can get a long way. So what's a user error look like at compile time? This is what it looks like. It's not, you know, beautiful, but at least it stopped you at compile time, and it got you into the right area. So you'll now look at this throw, and maybe there's a clue around the throw about what you did wrong. But if you leave the constexpr off, you'll get your throw. You won't get that error at compile time. It'll happen at runtime. Peter.
I think you could have gotten away with the static assert, but then you cannot call your function at runtime.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So if you have a static assert, then the compiler will stop you because it has to, and I'm done. Right. Yeah. Okay. So the time is up. I'm not going to shut it down. I'm going to carry on for just a few more minutes, and forgive me for that. So if you're to toss in a static assert, then that would be a way of making it happen at compile time.
Actually, you can't have static assert because parameters are not
context. Oh, all right. So you can't static assert. I need to move fast, so I'm going to stop handing out chocolate and answering questions. Let me just bull through here really fast. So in my opinion, runtime execution is really handy for debugging. In this particular case, it's not so good for debuggers. For users. So which of those two cases generates a runtime error? Yeah. That's the one that's easier to type, because you didn't have to type the constexpr. So you get punished by a runtime error if you forget the constexpr. And that means that every invocation of that function has the potential for error. So very quickly, getting to Beeman's question from a long time ago, is there a way to poison a function? And there isn't within the standard, but we've got a hack that Howard helped me with, who's Howard Hinnant, is sitting right next to Beeman. So what you can do under most circumstances is you can put an unresolved symbol in a throw. So the throw won't be evaluated. Here we've got an unresolved symbol, and we're dropping it into the throw. We're using it as the text for the throw. Because what you'll get out of that is rather than a compile time error, you'll get a link time error. So this is what you'll see. Thank you. and this was actually, it took a number of years for thrashing around to figure out that, you know, the standards guys really knew their work. They made it very hard to detect, to draw a distinction between runtime versus compile time. Why does it work? The throw must not be evaluated at compile time. The throw must be included in a runtime implementation. And the runtime implementation cannot link because there's an unresolved external. Is this the best you can do? It's the best we've found so far. The error is ugly, doesn't identify the line where the error was, and it may not work. Richard Smith, who's the brains behind C++ 14, this is a quote from him, that the compiler is allowed to include the throw code even though it's not executed. If your compiler goes ahead and includes that throw in the executable, then you're going to have your link time error. So any error will be a false positive. So you'll know, right now either you screwed up or your compiler isn't taking care of you. So the summary for the technique is a constexpr function has to have a throw in it. You declare an unresolved external const char star, and then you reference it. And I've kept you guys over time. The next room's going to start. I got to call it quits. But thank you very much for attending.